Hi everybody, welcome along. In for evening, for those of you who are online. So as you can see, this is class four in this topic, the spiritual teacher. This topic is the fourth module in the discovery of what is this. It begins we usually do by taking the refuge together, generating the mind of the saying a few prayers. Then we'll engage in the teaching itself, and in that teaching we'll see these places for reflection. Well, the first thing to do is, of course, get comfortable in your seat. So please do adjust your posture. Just check that your spine is straight, your shoulders relaxed, your hands and feet are in comfortable positions. And here you can leave your eyes completely closed or whatever it says. And when you are sitting comfortably, just let the body breathe itself. While the body continues to breathe itself, imagine the Buddha appears in the space in front of you. His body is made of golden light, and he's sitting on a golden throne, and he's surrounded by your own spiritual teachers, teachers of the lineage, other Buddhas, bodhisattvas, meditational deities, and so forth. I will see two beings. And all of us are facing the Buddha. Recollect that everyone equally wishes to avoid suffering, equally wishes to be happy, and equally lacks genuine happiness. While it's the present case, it's possible for this lack of genuine happiness to be changed, because the cause of suffering can be eliminated, and the potential for genuine happiness abides in all of us. This potential for genuine happiness is just the nature of reality revealed to us. To dispel the causes of suffering, actualize genuine happiness, we have to abandon attachment to the fantasy in this life. Then, to all the pleasures of psychic existence, to our own single welfare, and to the belief in an independent and objective reality. So these abandonments can be actualized. The actualization of them depends upon us. So decide to abandon the causes of suffering and to enter a path and bring about the true cessation of nirvana and full enlightenment. So then acknowledging the Buddha in front of us and his spiritual community. Think that you're leading all sentient beings in this journey towards enlightenment. And for firmness, join me in saying, I go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Soul. By the way, as I create peace into the Dharma, I come on Buddha to make with all sentient beings. I go for refuge to my own enlightenment, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Soul. By the merits of our creation, listening to the Dharma, I am become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge and try on enlightenment to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits of our creation, listening to the Dharma, I am become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So, in response to this prayer, does the magical lights and nectars pour forth from the heart of the Buddha and his spiritual entourage. These lights watch over us and over all the beings surrounding us. These land selectors remove obstacles to our spiritual practice, and they empower the potential we have locked deep inside us. Have the potentials of method and wisdom invigorated. Recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Science and development has come to establish all beings in those states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and discord. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of vassals or friends and friendship for enemies. In response to score, boundless thoughts, like what and then spring forth in the heart of the Republic. They wash over itself all the people surrounding them, removing obstacles and hindrances to your practice, and empower deep potentials of all the method. The recollection of field work for the community. Decide to purify yourself even further, to accumulate merit and to increase the merit. Accomplished, join me in citing a 7-minute prayer, saying, reverently I prostrate my body, I present clouds of every type of offering, that's all I can do. I declare all my interactions, humanities, endless time, and rejoice in them for all ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cycle, consistency, and eternal being done with all beings. I dedicate my own and other spirits to the great and mighty one. So, to prevent us from clinging to the merit and the purification practices we've done, recollect emptiness. But all things have no intrinsic nature, have no objective existence, but do exist dependently upon their own consciousness and name. So imagine your body, speech, and mind are all the merits of the accumulated over countless lifetimes, or utterly transform it to a pure land, which you used to offer to the Buddha and his entourage. Say so. This ground, anointed with very snowy flowers, adorned with very four countries of the world. I am the Jesus of the Lord of the world, where all the beings and joys are together. Yidamba, the Lord, and the Lord, and the Lord. We've released the offer, and the woman accepts it and smiles at us. And we meet his gaze, we look up into his eyes. Looking into the eyes of the woman, feel accepted, at ease, and confident that your practices will bear a more positive fruit. Now, an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart, moves through space, and comes to abide by the crown of your head, facing the same direction as you are. And the emanation now begins to descend to the level of your heart, whereby it begins to expand, filling your body and mind with lights and nectars. Pour out through the pores of the skin, filling the 10 directions of the space, and establishing every being within space to now be within the light state. Imagine throughout the vast expanse of emptiness. Heerlijk samen op het mantra. En je begint te zeggen, three times. Twee. Thinking you've accomplished your own purpose and the purpose of others. And have a raise of mind to draw from the 10 directions of space and then re-enter your heart. You can hear different sounds, feel movements in the body, you know what a seat feels like. In other words, you are embodied. And you understand that this meditation is one of imagination, which has imprinted the mind, leaving potentials for your actual full awakening. And to bring this about, you need to rely upon a teacher. And why do you need to rely upon a teacher? Because at present, you do not know how to gather the two accumulations or how to purify the two observations. Wishing to know how to do that, you want to find a teacher and devote yourself to them. I think that this is what you wish to do. And bring it in through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. With your last breath. So we've covered the fourth class. So we began by looking at the need for a teacher, and there's a reason for us need. Who can tell us why we need a teacher? That we do not know how to gather the two accumulations or
how to two
observations. Right. That's the simplest answer. And that when we seek a teacher, we need teachers who have different types of skills to show us how to maneuver through the different pathways, etc. Can you see a number of different people? What types of teachers are we talking about then? Tantric master, what, the Yana master? Chris?
Professor.
Yeah, the professor. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's great. Well, okay. And then we need to find this teacher. And when we go searching for one, there are a number of different things that we have, the bar that we should do. The four major things we need to consider. Consider the same. How do you find it? We're coming to that. So here we need to check the teacher before we engage with lineage and care for students are two of the things we need to go look at. Then the teacher itself, especially a Mahayana teacher, uses 10 qualities. The six that really pertain to the teacher himself and four for the student. Ben, can you tell them the four qualities required for teaching the student work?
The four qualities of the student?
No, the four qualities that a teacher should have to teach the student. The teacher needs to be...
I'll bet 10.
Yeah, I'm just asking for the last four. The student. So one of the first one on this means is skillful. What's your next one?
Abandoned disappointment.
Abandoned disappointment and dispiritedness, yeah. Next one is to teach the loving kindness, and the last one was to be
enthusiastic.
Excellent.
Okay.
And the first three?
Discipline.
Serenity.
And then sorrow and pacified. Okay. That's what I write from all. Sorrow and pacified. Okay. And here's this next one. So the teacher also has to have a wealth of scriptural knowledge, have a thorough understanding of reality, and know all of the truth. That's right. This is the first one. I just always use the memorize this one, and this is quite simple. And again, if it comes to students, I always see a guy hanging on to a sail, or a big t-shirt on a student, written with a sail, or something like that. Skillful abandoned experience and so forth. And then we had these student qualities. So I think Arya Sangha put forward the first three, and then Chandrakirti added two more to make five. And you remember like last week, every funny picture to use?
Yes.
What do you think? What are the qualities of a student?
Intelligent.
What else? The last two. What are the last two qualities that you have?
Respect.
Respect and
attentiveness.
Yeah. Did anybody find some little black fellow there?
Yes.
How could we not?
So you might be a great disciples of the Buddha, I think also. What body are you? I forget it. So some of you look at the titles, you see one of them there is dark. He's like an African. And the others have a completely different complexion. Okay, so today we're going to follow on from this, these qualities of the seed. So what we're talking about today is how this, if the student has these qualities, how they, what sort of attitude should they have towards the teacher? And there are nine. So again, nonetheless, lots of this. Then we're going to look at some of the benefits of recollecting the kindness of the teacher, and also this idea of being respectful. Here we're going to sort of look at some of the benefits of being of having these qualities of a student, basically. Again, I don't think I changed the books here, no, everything is still the same. For the commentary on tonight's teaching, probably the best one here is Steps on the Path to Enlightenment by Jesse Sopa. It's also a very good part on The Heart of the Path by Nama Sopa. And then you get one of the commentary on these attitudes. So there are nine attitudes, but they're broken up into four. So the first one is this idea: a student should consider themselves as being like a wise young son or a wise young child. The second is like a vajra or a diamond. The third is like the earth. And finally, there's carrying out responsibilities. So then you have the other six on there. So this last term, carrying out responsibilities, is there any sort of picture form in your mind what that might be? What would it look like?
Guru yoga.
Guru yoga. Okay, what's a picture that demonstrates that? Okay, two different
ones.
I want a picture.
Oh.
If you're carrying responsibilities, what would you see in your mind? You think you're carrying something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. What's going on?
You're
carrying something.
You have things on your back.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like too heavy. Like, you're happy to do it. Maybe, I don't know.
No, but this is the thing. So, what I'm, again, is I'm trying to encourage you to remember this stuff. So what do you start off with? You saw for the wise young child, right? What's he carrying? What's he got in his hand? What's he standing on?
Yeah.
The whole planet. And what's the next one he's got? He's carrying out responsibilities It's just like that. He's got a backpack on his back, right around the street. You just grab it, doesn't have to set it up. There's just so much to memorize. You know, so you see lots and lots of pictures in there. That's, you know, it doesn't take them much to just join all the dots together. This is the first one. You know, it's like the first three up, like a wise young son. He's got the mantra of the diamond. I have him standing on the whole planet Earth, and you look down, and there's this big backpack, all the books and things. He's responsible. So let's have a look at some of the what these terms mean, wise young son. So a number of years ago, Lama Zagra sent out to all the centers a lot of sort of picture types. I think it might be in the front of it, actually. And it's got these nine attitudes on it.
I've seen it at
CI. Yeah, you've seen it there. I'm sure we've got one somewhere too here. It's got a picture of each of these things and a little commentary. And so this is the first one it says. It says, to be like a wise young son, and the text beneath it says, may I be like an obedient son, acting in accordance with the Guru's advice. This attitude of relying upon a trusted wildfire is like a wise child or son and a trust his father. So this is like a loving parent who naturally seeks the best long-term outcome for their child. Similarly, a qualified teacher will guide us away from harmful actions. By yielding a self-willed control to a verified teacher, we clear our stubborn conceptual obscurations. The wise element, like a wise example, the wise element means a student never abandons intelligent judgment. If a teacher gives directions that are clearly incorrect or unethical, the student skillfully and respectfully declines while still maintaining reverence for the teacher. Well, this is not going to be easy for us, is it? It's basic when somebody does tells us, put us on the wall, it's like something's wrong with them. Right? That's what we do now. We blame the messenger. We want to shoot them. But I remember the story in the text where I think so. This was the Buddha 2B. You must have been some previous life on the Dhamma path. You might have come across the story too where his teacher tells all the students that if they really have faith in him, they will go out and steal different things from him and bring them back. So all the students do accept on him. Response because no, it goes completely against everything we teach and what we'll be learning. So I don't get it. So he's the only one who restrains himself. And then when the others come back with the food, the teacher tells them all off. He says, here's the good one, this fellow here. And another elaboration of that, so we know one of our students. She became a translator for the Karmapa for one and many other teachers overseas. Anyway, I'll tell you how. And so when people hit on you to have those teachers to have sex with you, you put your hands together and say, oh, I'm so sorry, it would be shame, but my qualities are nowhere near as good as your own. So I have to abstain. That's the only reason you could do this sort of thing. You would have to be in a tantric relationship with them, and your realizations have to be on an equal standard. Not so if they're not, you've got a way out, and you can do it respectfully. So I don't know, there are many Western women who go to Nepal and Tibet, and they come back with their police husbands, and they're often people who were ordained once and now they're not. So I'm sort of thinking just like stay intelligent. Don't give away your ability to reason. So you have to act. It's funny that it's just act in accordance with the guru's advice, as long as it accords with the Dharma. And as you probably know, this idea of being like an obedient son or student, many Westerners have done this without, and they've dropped all their reasoning and just go, because they asked me, and because I see them as a fully enlightened being, must be right. And so they go, and then they find out later on there's two or three other women doing the very same thing, and Nixon, Aunty Doherty starts happening. Or like I also remember when John Cropper used to do this, right? He used to always be leaning on students. And all you'd have to say is no. Or just give them a whack and he's gone. No problem. And yet, I also know that some of the students who did go to bed with him, no problems between him and the teacher and anybody else. They're fine. So you just gotta like, I'm just checking your own intentions, your motivation, your reasoning. But why are you going to say yes to this? Yeah.
But then that teacher isn't the qualities you're looking for in a teacher. So would you stay with it?
Yeah, no, that's right. So this is the thing. So people don't sort of, like keep it switched on. And then again, like I said, so here is a Mahayana guru, and you're sort of you're trying to work with them. So of course, these Mahayana gurus can also become a Vajrayana guru too, can't they? That's all encompassing. And one of the things in there is to see your teacher as an actual Buddha, so they're fully enlightened. So these people just forget everything and go, oh, if they're fully enlightened, then they must know what they're doing. And if you think like that, great, no problem for you or the teacher, terrific. But that's not always the case, is it? Just some stuff. See, the idea is wise. Wise about this. It doesn't, you ask them a number of different things you could say to them. Like I said, so what would realizations represent? And it could tell you, great, because they're not mine. Sorry, can't go on with this. Yeah, so when our teacher's name is Ruth. And she told us, I'll share this with the women in our class as well. Has it ever come up to somebody who ever hits something young? This is a great thing to say, but all due respect for what you're going to get up. And I guess you might have worked. So I guess you might have worked with get the robes, and it was having sex with one of the students. Right? So this is definitely no. He has to hand his robes and become, it cannot be an ordained person in the political tradition doing this sort of thing. So he refused. And he kept up this relationship, and he wanted people like Lama Zopa, his holiness, to give his blessing.
Oh!
So it worked. And so Lama Zopa sent to him, and then later on, his holiness too. So there's one of these ways of testing whether you're suitable to engage in what they call Kamamudra. And that is that you have to make a piece of fruit fall from the branch of a tree, then unwrap and go back up and reattach it. And if you can't do that, you can't have this relationship. If you can,
That's pretty
well, you have the skill, but then the thing is, does your partner?
That's
And if
so
they don't, you
rare
can't.
to find that
It is,
connection
that's
these days.
very rare, very,
Yeah.
very rare. Yeah, and when I've read those 13th Dalai Lama, this sort of thing came up, you have a lot of. There are a number of highly advanced students practicing, you found out coming in. Ask them these questions. Three of them said, no, we want to stop. Stop or disrobe. One of them said, yeah, you got it. You could keep doing it. You have to keep really quiet about this. Don't talk about it. So he was able to. But again, so oftentimes what happens is that the guru themselves pick the partner for you. Because this is not like an ordinary relationship, right? This is not like, this is not an ordinary sex relationship, things like this. This is like a practice. So the guru, of course, knew this student here was suitable because she transused, you know, higher animals and so on and so on. So if they wish to, they could do it together, practice it together. But of course, when you do this, it's never, the view is never two people, it's two deities in the union. And so each person has to adopt the view, if you enter the spirit, then the rise of the deity, and you're not meant to have an orgasm. If that happens, you've lost the plot. You made a mistake. Anyway, so yeah, it's like that.
Sorry, you know, I think he
was the layperson then. He was like a surfer, some sort of thing to all the monks. But, yeah.
Because you can't do that practice at all if you're ordained, right?
In the Guru tradition, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll see oftentimes in the text great stories where the people were that had all these powers and they almost were. And many of them were the best at their whole monastery, the most learned, everything. And then they had to hand their robes back in and go out into the world. They kept all their vows, they kept their tantric vows, all these sort of things. They're all there.
They have to wander around cinder trees.
Or down to the pub.
Yeah.
Controversial and so forth of what I'm saying, but I always want to share this stuff, especially amongst the women, because it does happen. And we've had students here, American students, like many Americans. One of those were them. But these two girls, two women that came here, were part of Chogwa Chompa's community, and they have first hand experience of what happened there. I just want to say, tell you this, you can avoid it. And if you just remember this one, then put your hands in your pocket. I'm so sorry I can't do that with you. I just do not have the same realization as you do. And they will know, oh, that's smarty wasted it. And they'll back up for me.
Yes.
I'd be like a wise young child. Of course, I'm here. But why I want an obedient but wise and son. The second is like a badger or like a diamond. So there's. Even when Mara, friends, and the like try to speak to him, may I be like a mantra inseparable forever. So a mantra here does not mean that we've got a picture of that of a mantra, but that's not the mantra we're talking about here. The mantra is unbreakable. And whatever the object is, you can do it. So that's just what I'm saying. Unshakable trust. So cultivating a diamond, unshakable trust in the world is the essential mechanism that safeguards us from any development from doubts and negative social influences. So the attitude emphasizes an unshakable bond. There is an unshakable bond between the ultimate truth and the conventional truth, between emptiness and its object. And your trust in the teacher must be just like a diamond, it must be totally unbreakable. So the best illustration of this. Oh, there was two. One was the life story of Milarepa. And the other one is the story of the trust between Naropa and Tilopa in the Kara. And these are the great stories of the other traditions, much more in the Karutra about this sort of thing, where teachers give the students incredible tasks. They can just go, oh, my God, I'm out of here. I would certainly say that. You know, the story of Naropa. Naropa was about to commit suicide, the way Marpa taught him. So heavy. And then he said, at the end, he said, and Marpa's advice to Naropa, he said, when you have students, do not teach the way I taught them. Mm-hmm. This is just for him, because he killed all those people. Naropa was a murderer. And the obscuration was so heavy. And he knew there's no way, you know, you can develop yourself until you get rid of that. So he had really strenuous, difficult point
to jump off.
Yeah, he took jump off the tower. He told him to, when he saw a wedding party coming, he said, go and rob the wedding train. You should do all these things. Right? So here, again, it's very interesting. They're tantric stories. You're not meant to take them literally. Right, symbols or something else. They're all symbolic. But I don't know what was symbolic. What was we just getting out of it is just the story. The real life, I take it literally. Okay, so that, I mean, look at that, you know, that's impossible, these stories, right? Like, gosh, it must have some other sort of meaning going on, some other way of explaining it.
Like, shattering the silk crossing or something.
Yeah, it's like like this idea of Hank saying like a Vajra or like a diamond, you know, and then you look, well, you know what a Vajra is, but then you think, in fact, the change has got some explanations that really talking about emptiness and not about the stone metal. So you have to be so careful here. I think there's 5 to 7, maybe even more. So when you read like the Catholic literature, this is where you really do need a teacher, because there's no way you can explain for yourself. And you'll decipher on the literature, what's the first mistake? But it doesn't mean anything like that. Yet this is how you get it in the books. And like I said, have a look at that, so it's a really, really strange, especially, like I said, Naropa and Naropa. Yeah, Naropa was very much like Shantideva, the greatest scholar of his time. He ran the Landa Monastery. He was the top guy. And one day, what happened was this ugly, really ugly woman appeared in front of the monastery. And so she asked him this question, and he responds, and it's the right answer, you know, and she's happy. So she asks him another question, and this time the answer is wrong. It's not wrong, but it's coming out with ego. And she goes, blah, 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 really tells him off, and says, all you know is scholastic knowledge. And then so Naropa, I think, he leads the monastery, goes looking. There's a woman says, you've got to find a man called Tilopa. He will help me actually realize it. And so he goes back up to Tilopa. A long, long journey, you know, finding that nobody knows in the sky. And finally, someone said, Tilopa, well, this is a guy who's like that. I don't know if it's your Tilopa. But he's over there, and he's really scraggly, ugly, skinny guy. And what he's doing is he's grabbing live fish, throwing them in and cooking them. And the robot's going, that can't be the guy. No one will do that. Anyway, Tilopa's sort of like a magician. And these fish aren't dying. Or just a big, complete calm appearance for Naropa. Anyway, he mentioned us to follow, but Tilopa's job is to knock out the conceptions, the wrong conceptions, that so he can see it directly. Yeah, at the beginning, he's always talking about seeing. That's what Tilopa's job is. I want to make it see, not think it. Actually, huge old testimony. Well, they're great stories. They're in there, but just be careful about taking them absolutely literally. Pastor, we've got like the earth. So it says that when the guru gives me work, whatever the burden, may I be like the earth, carrying it all. Now, there's another thing to say about this advice. Perhaps one day you're going to have an interview with your teacher, and this is really talking about someone who has a relationship with the teacher. It's like saying, this is my guru, you and I, and we rely on you. So the teacher, of course, will give you instruction, tell you to do this, tell you to do that. Right? And I remember here at the center, for many years, people were very afraid, very scared to have these conversations with their teachers. Right? Why? Because they thought, oh my God, he might ask me to do 100,000 prostrations and do this and do that. And I don't want to do that. It's too much. Everyone was really scared. You know? But you also want to, you can always say, I'm sorry, so I can't do that. And give them a reason. You got to question, because if you just hear it like this, you might not have the full picture. You might say this, but I mean, I could take 5 years to do it, or you could take 10 years. You know, you're sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to go home and start the life. Blah, blah, blah. So always ask questions. Otherwise, you get off on the wrong foot. And yeah, these teachers are very, if you have those one-on-one meetings, you'll know how kind they are and compassionate. They care about you. They're not up to break your spirit or give you things you can't do. And so, you know, it's a relationship. So that means you have to talk. It's a back and forth thing. It's not just, they tell you what to do and off you go and you do it and you come back and say, I've done, what's next? It's not too good on that. So, being like the earth means willingly accepting the entire responsibility of fulfilling your teacher's constructive instructions without getting discouraged or angry. But consider this the earth analogy. The solid ground beneath us never complains or grows tired. No matter how many heavy cities, massive mountains, or the rest of the beings it has to support, it bears everything equally. And this is how it is. Be like this. Again, there's a great. Lama Ratisha had a great student, and he was a lay person called Drum Tompa. And when Lama Ratisha passed, he gave all his teaching to the lay person. You know, you have other people there with him. So it's not about when you're available. It's like that sort of the development who is suitable to carry a package of the teachings. So this was given to John Tonga. And as time went by, of course, Lama Ratisha got very sick and he would pass away again. But going off to different places, John Tonga would always be there, and like he would, if the ground was dirty, one place I had a teacher, but it was quite muddy. So John Tonga got down on his hands and knees and swept all the mud away. And he had some really white clay, I don't know where he got that from, but he sprinkled it all out and made this really nice place to give for the teachers. So he would just like, I guess you saw from this time, that's about how he would work with his teacher. You bathe them, you do all the stuff that nurses here would do. But never be discouraged. Never give up. Whatever the challenge is, you're always wise. So when we get, if you were to get discouraged in your training, could you find some sort of another attitude to adopt instead, so that discouragement would be sort of pacified?
He realised it, he actually enjoyed it, and he realised it was a big learning for him. So you know, sometimes we, well, I'll be honest, you know, I'm not happy at first, but then you think, well, it's, in the end, it'll be for my ultimate good. I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes it's like you rejoice in the fact that you have this opportunity. Like, yes, it's hard, but you rejoice in the fact that, A, you've got the Dharma. But it doesn't have to be a burden.
And that's the thing. It should not. It can be hard and difficult, but it doesn't have to be a burden. And that requires a different way of thinking about what's going on. Like you say, you are also recollected of it. No one said the Dharma was easy.
No.
And in fact, that doing the most transformative effects take place when you're doing quite difficult things and you make some sort of breakthrough. There's that. But also, so there's that. But if you also have knowledge of Tonglen, straight up you go. That's why I love that practice, because if it feels bad, it's like it's good. It's like, oh, my practice is actually working. I'm taking on the sufferings of others who would really dislike doing this practice. I'll do it. You know, for others who can't do it, yeah, I'll do this.
Hey, if maybe this is more for, you know, more at the beginning phase, but if you, like, say you do try and do the Tonglen, but maybe, so you're trying to change your attitude, but then maybe you notice, like, practically, oh, my, it still feels like a burden, so my practice actually is suffering. Like, I don't have the energy. What would you do then?
I'll think about some other. Yeah, it all comes down to using the mind for thinking. But again, it's like you're saying that the Geshe Sherif story. That was a great story. So you, like, you go, oh, could I do this? You know, so again, you can go to people and say, oh, this is what's happening. What do you suggest? That's why they're there.
Right. So, another question. So then, say the teacher has given you, you know, like, do this many prostrations or recitations or whatever, and maybe you say, okay, I think I can do that, but then you realize, well, maybe I can't, or something, or something's getting in the way. Can you then go back to the teacher?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So this means you go back and explain what's going on. It's a bit like Meryl Gibbons' story, wasn't it? Like we were just talking about. So he was doing a retreat, and the heat was so much. And if that was me, I couldn't think at all. Like, you know, you can't take your skin off, and it's just the heat. I can't think. I can't do anything now. But he got advice from that nun that was there. Right? That really helped him. And so it's really hard thing. Can it be really useful? Because he decides that he's going to end up with advice. And so that's what we need. You know, all the practices aren't easy. And when we get, you know, you don't need to be hard on them. As soon as we do, that's how they're going to appear to us, aren't they? Straight up. That's the first thing we should not do.
That was one big thing I took away from this, how he said, talk about translating into your own words, make it easy on yourself. Use better words
that
make sense to you.
Yeah, so when I was going, oh, okay, goodness. Was one of the things I used to do was I'd get all the different eight versions of thought transformation, put them along, and just take all the lines out and make my own eight versions of thought transformation. Because it read better, it affected me more. And that only came about because one day, I really dislike being led in meditations by most people. I find it so boring. So I'm sorry if I bore you. I know what it feels like. And so I just, you know, I'd be there, I'd be changing their meditation language to me. You know? And then one day, big difference. And I just changed that word. It's really important how you speak to yourself, how you use the words, because when you do, you get an experience. Yeah, so just like he did, I'll be skillful. Okay, anything else that you'd like to ask about this? So Ruby set off as a child, then we went to the Vajra or the Dharmic, and then there's the earth.
A question on the Vajra one. So is there sort of like two parts to it where it's like inseparable to the teacher, but also like how does the emptiness kind of come into that? Is it more about the relationship?
Yeah, well, so every object is empty in itself, isn't it? Like you don't have the empty sort of object there and here's the object.
Yeah.
Right? There's never ever like that. One object is empty. This is inseparable. The emptiness of any object is inseparable from the object itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do our first meditation. Adjust the posture, keep your spine straight, the shoulders relaxed. Check to sweep your head and sitting evenly on your neck. And to close your eyes completely or partially open, and let the body breathe itself. Now set an altruistic intention to build a wise and steady relationship with the mentor for the good of all beings. So have you ever wondered how to transform hard and difficult training into genuine joy? Well, we probably have thought this and we have wondered this, but our true growth requires relying on the teacher and for us to have the humility of a child, the firm trust of the mantra, and the stability of the earth. When you hold this together, then hard tasks become clear choices for inner freedom. Your mind can become like solid ground, bearing great weight without complaint. Now what comes up inside you when your ego resists a teacher's honest words? Your stubborn pride will block your growth. This is like being an upside down jar. You cannot hold water. So how can you keep an unbroken trust when outside doubts arise? See doubts as awesome thoughts that cannot touch the core of your resolve. Strong protection. It's like a luminous shield. What happens if your lessons or duties become genuinely difficult? If duties do become genuinely difficult, look at these three tools. Use them to reduce your pride and expand your capacity. Perhaps in the next few days, try to identify one piece of guidance you might have put off, and then act on it with humility. Now breathe in through your nostrils, exhale through the mouth, with your eyes start opening. So again, just to sum up here, remember when you are given instructions, you do not have to immediately go, yeah, I'll do it, you know, like I have to do it. It's a relationship. I always remember say, you know, the guru is not the foundation of all the good quality, no, that's all it says, right? is not the source of interest. The relationship you have is, of course, it's all about relationships. It's all dependent on Isaac. You can't just do it all. Right? So always be ready to talk. I mean, this is, you know, we're not going to get very far if we don't actually trust the people we're talking to. We've got some, all sorts of things like that. And you know, teachers do have done in the past some pretty silly things to their students. And one of the things I've always taken away from teachers who behave unskillfully to students is that just, what's the teaching for me? Don't do that. Yeah, that's I always do that. And you can see it really screws people up. It's not wildly bad stuff in the Dharma. Just don't stop. The only thing when you crank it down, you just go, no, that's what I will never do. It's just so you know. And I go, if you're watching my dad or somebody else, that's what I'm taking about from this family. Don't ever do what he's done. So this is how can be valuable to you. So if you do some poorly, then you get all bitter and cranky. Just go, don't, I won't do that. I can see what's going on. I'm not ever going to do that. So you got to think, we're all students here, right? Most people don't want to teach Dharma or get scared about it. But hey, that's what a Buddha does. That's what they do. So the sooner we get over these unnecessary fears, the better. We don't do it now, next life, so another life, right? But you've got the best opportunity to do it in this body with this mind. So here are the six attitudes for carrying out responsibility. The first is, you have an attitude like an all-encompassing mountain, an ordinary servant, a sweeper. A rope, a dog, a ferret. So again, you know, you can see that these six terms are all pictorial. You know, so oftentimes, what I've often studying, it's a little bit different from reading, isn't it? A reading you can sort of skim on and waste across a lot of reading. But Dharma reading is not really like that. You can't just screw this with Dharma text. You're sort of looking at what's it mean all the time, and how do I do that, and you know, get moments of inspiration and stuff like that. So when I come across this like this, I always think of like, I slow my down now, and I go, how can I hold that list in my mind? How can I memorize it? So this is a simple one, isn't it? There's a big mountain, and guess who's going up the mountain? Well, he's a servant. And what's the meaning going up to him? Well, he's a sweeper. What's the sweeper doing? He's sweeping these little pieces of rope. And guess what? A dog grabs that piece of rope and he leaps onto it. The attitude. Now it's an actual person sweeping. There's a person. Oh, okay. Do you have sweepers? Or even here? They've got a broom that they sweep.
Okay.
So it's different to being servant.
So you can look at what's the attitude of servant. That's right.
Humble,
humility. And same as a sweeper, isn't it? Requires some sort of humility. Especially here, at one stage, I was always scared of that I'd end up. It'll be the last days of my life in the same island that I was about 11 or 12. When I was 11 or 12, I used to be a paper boy selling papers. You know, you can still see men selling papers. And, oh my God, what if my life went like that? And I was like, really afraid of it until I saw this scenario. No, this is good. It's not a sweeper, it's also attitude you bring to it. How can I do that and not be ashamed? So got quite interesting in the different types of attitude. So that's what I need to use. I'm going to go through a bit faster. So I took an hour on the first four, three. So the first one is an all-encompassing mountain. So in the verses, when I devote myself to the Guru, whenever suffering occurs, may I be like a mountain, immovable. It's only when we try to develop our mental strength to meet the different challenges we'll find in our spiritual journey. So here's like, so, you know, we have this large mountain and it's massive. Big storms, the mountain goes away. It stays right there. It doesn't matter how much is coming across. So it's sort of like when you have a relationship with nature, that's what can happen to you, your own mind. Is that pushing? You know, they're trying to help us here. But the only way to help us is to get the disturbing emotions to allow us and go, great, there you go. That's what we need to work with. But you yourself, when they come, right, you've got to become immovable. So you don't want to say, so probably done them there at the time, but when we first started doing numbers at the old center, oh man, I was just exploding. I just got walked down the roof, went down the service station. We're down the street and grab us a coat. So I did. I bought it and then my mind just calmed right down. I hadn't even drank it. And I was going, geez, look at that. I'm okay. We straight back, continue to do that. But that's, you know, like I said, you know, I was not like a mountain. I ran away. That's what I'm saying. Stuff happens. Mm-hmm. The foundational textbooks describe a specific mindset for shouldering responsibility under a teacher's guidance, being completely unshakable like a massive mountain. This means that no matter what difficult circumstances arise, when your guide corrects you harshly or public opinion challenges your choices, your inner devotion and promise to practice remain entirely firm. Yeah, we have read that in the story of Miller Raper. We can, different words that Mark will put in one day, and then he's saved. The mountain, an ordinary servant. And the verse is, even if I have to perform all the unpleasant tasks, may I be like a servant of the king with a mind undisturbed. But just as a servant performs various tasks without complaint, the spiritual student should be ready to do anything the teacher requires, no matter how lonely or unpleasant, approaching tasks with humility, enthusiasm, and dedication, especially at service to one's spiritual teacher. To be like a dedicated service means completely letting go of personal pride, self-importance, and vanity. One of the stories they talk about is how, yeah, when the rain comes down, no, I think that was like a true story. There's quite a few different events here. We'll end up working with different teachers. Probably Geshe Sofa would be the most common one, and also Geshe Sherry. So he says, working right by with them, they'll ask me to do certain things. They're often very gentle, I don't like notes in class, but other times they can turn around and be very fierce towards me. And so just like, you know, when you're a servant, you can't rise up and get all cranky towards your boss. And the servants, you know, they just serve, do their job, they don't come back with halfway or anything like that. Here's a sweeper. Here the verse says, may I abandon pride, holding myself lower than the guru, May not be like a sweeper. So you know, so many of these are in the Middle East, in the East. Being the sweep is a low position, just like in Africa, to the hospitals and so forth, like the people sweeping up. So this again, embodying humility, rejecting pride. In fact, the story is just the big story. Yeah, so these two, servant and sweeper, are really about noticing and I guess vanity or pride. In fact, I was talking to a little Rabina, and I said, hey, what's your obstacle? And I and it was the same thing. Don't tell me I'm wrong. Yeah, so I was thinking of, you know, being like the sweeper. I thought, oh my gosh. Like if it was like selling newspapers at that thing, that no, I'm providing service for these people. Yeah. Okay, we did just finish. So we've got, so what were they? There was a sweeper, a servant, a mountain, wasn't it? We come to a mountain. Ah, maybe see a servant came and tried up the mountain. And then he just came along, sweeping behind him. And what's it, what's, we haven't come to this, what's he going to sweep?
Right.
And where's the rope going to go?
Dog.
Okay. That's right. So he's not answering. Okay, let's meditate. Again, you adjust the posture, let your body breathe itself. And between the meditation and altruistic intention. I think we're learning about these attitudes so that we can apply them ourselves and have a second relationship with the Guru so that we become a lifelong. So just acknowledge how easily your own piece is broken by a sharp comment or sometimes just an added chore. Now, true freedom belongs to those who build a mind as firm as a mountain and as open as a valley. But when you surrender defensive pride, then outside chaos loses its power in you. Let's bring to mind a solid granite mountain that's standing tall with wide open sky and slope goes down to a valley. Now, can you remember a moment when a small insult made your mind shake with anger? That shaking and the sting arose because your ego reacted to protect its fragile pride. But if you see yourself as a mountain, harsh words have no effect upon you. Imagine yourself at the bottom of a mountain, screaming at it that it's so tall and hard, and take no effect on the mountain. This is what so mind we want. So how could you lower yourself to learn from the hard moments we meet during our samsaric life? Well, our wisdom will blossom when we approach our spiritual guides with a quiet attention to the servant. So just commit yourself to dropping your guard just at once in the next conversation. Sweep away your own inattentiveness. So again, in your own mind, just run these three attitudes as the mountain, as a servant, and as a sweeper. And just try to recollect a couple of words about each of them. What does it mean to be like a mountain? A servant. And a sweeper. And breathing in through the nostrils, exhale. Now, last thing, as you know, the first was like a rope. Now, be like a rope, joyfully holding the Guru's work, no matter how difficult or heavy the burden. So, that's interesting. For me, I find it too difficult for me to do. I know what my mind would do to do this. So, many years ago, I read a story of a monk in India, a Western monk. What was it? He's at the sun. I forget the name of the center. But he was there and he gets a telephone call. Lama Zopa rings him up and says that he's coming with a number of other dignitaries and to set up all the stuff for a puja, and he's never done it before. And I went, oh my God, if that was me, like, what? he was able to do it. But again, they're like, you don't know. You don't know, do you? So
that's before the internet.
That's right.
Before
Google. It says the Tilopa and the Ropa Guru disciple relationships exemplifies this whole world. So rope, of course, can pull heavy loads up a steep mountain without breaking. It can help hold a big sack on your back like this. Yeah, so you want to you tie the future and the teachings to your mind. The dedication means unbroken. And here's the dog. Even when the Guru criticizes, provokes, or ignores me, may I be like a dog without anger. Never responding with harm. So you must have seen or done it yourself, right? When a dog has misbehaved and you cut it off. You've got to shake your finger out of it, speak very firmly, like a hole in the room. That's what you've got to let them know, right? Now, if you're not hitting them and beating them and all this sort of stuff, right? Then dogs don't often like bite you because you're telling them off, do they? They sort of like, you know, they're kind of warm, aren't they? Just, you know, when you go down like they do, they know they're being told off. Cats don't. But they don't attack their own.
Attack
mine.
That's why I have a dog on.
Yeah, so the dog doesn't attack us. It's the same with us. You'll know if you're another student, she went out to Dr. Copeland, and she was walking behind the teacher, and she was saying to her, oh, that's another such and such. Why is it amazing? Da 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 da. And he turned around and just gave him a filthy sword. And he was, you know, just really whacked him out. Shut up. You know, he told him, oh, I'm just giving this terrible look. He didn't bite him, but I did catch him. I left the proper. And then we have the fairy. It's a now, be like a boat, never upset at any time to come and go from the Guru. Another time when I was open was here at the Greek Club down on the east of the old city. No, the Greek Club? Yes, it was.
It's a party.
Oh, yeah, thank you. It was a time club. So we ran over to the kitchen there and we're setting up and we're just about to go because we're here. I need this text. And she tells me, need the text. I've got to run from the club back up the center and get it. But I'm on and then this goes. And I was like, oh man, I'm just like a bun top coming on the go. So I ran up the water back, put it down there. He wanted another one.
Oh,
and he just started laughing. He's empty, you know, just. And there we go. So I thought, like, I'm going to run back. But it was fun because I kept my eyes, oh, I'm just like a bun. I've got to go up across the road, bring it back, and she's in the air. You know, it was, instead of thinking I went, well, I have done in the past, we sit there and go, couldn't you get it together yourself? What's wrong with you? Aren't you supposed to be? You know, none of that occurred. It was just this fun thing of meeting a man which was just like a bun. So really, I found this a number of different times of you. In this situation, and you can just like grab a snippet of a verse, or even just this term, I'm just like, okay. They make the mind lighter, and they make it easier for to do things.
Is that how, I think the way to think for when like these touring teachers who visit sort of that just once a year, is this a good mindset to have with that, like if the teachers has to go as well? Like, the teacher coming and going, or is that
for
the student?
I think it's the student is more for the student.
Okay.
I was going to say, in this respect, these are actually sort of set, it's like you play a game. It's like you're playing a game in a way. It's like playing a role.
Gosh, so now I need what's interesting. Oh, we just talked about that. So I just did this last meditation. Okay. Again, drop a little tension, sit up straight. So sit this altruistic intention. We practice these attitudes so that we can embody them and in that way have a good, meaningful relationship with the teacher, thereby becoming enlightened quicker for the benefit of others. So we have these three similes. So recollect the first one. And its meaning. Then we have the second one, the loyal dog. And that's gentle and devoted, even after a sharp correction. So if you're false or trained about, just recollect this idea of being like a dog. Devoted. Has no defensive pride. And if we wish to perform our daily task with a sense of lust and joy, then think that you're like a dependable ferry that's crossing the river all day and night without tiring. And if you see boats, let them remind you to serve others and not complain. And just carry this simile from the dog and the boat into your day tomorrow. Then exhale. I've got last two slides. Again, So we should, a student should look at the Buddha as being kinder than even Shakyamuni Buddha. So we have this great respect for the Buddha, but then you say, like, your teacher in this life is even kinder than the Buddha is. And you go, like, why? How come? You know, we should ask these questions, right? And the answer is, all the past things do not guide us. But this Buddha, this teacher, is now guiding us on the path. He's kindly teaching us the Dharma, and he's kindly messing in our mind stream, and he looks after us materially and spiritually. So the historical Buddha called Shakyamuni is not, but this Dharma is. So that's why he's going to be kinder than even Shakyamuni Buddha. It's not intended as an objective comparison of their spiritual qualities, but rather it's meant to be like a tool for our reflection. And the reflection should be that, man, aren't we fortunate? Aren't we lucky? If we were born in the Buddha's time, we forgot that we've no idea, but we're born in this time, and we've met the Dharma, and we've met this person, and they're doing all these things for us. And so one of the ways you could respond to this good fortune is to continuously call the guru from afar. Now, guru has many different meanings. Now, so one guru, they're always with us. They're not far away. The thing is, we forget how close the guru is. Because the actual guru is your own mind. And it's with you all the time. Right? So we need to remember this and rely upon our mind with the help of the external guru, the person. So one of the ways of doing this is this lovely prayer, this magnificently glorious guru, dispelling the path of darkness, revealing the path of liberation, liberating from the waters of psychic existence, eliminating the diseases of the fire poisons, who is the restraint of joy. Now, how about you remember that one? Well, there's an acronym there, isn't it? So maybe if I'm... And there's a Steely Dan song called Dr. Wu. Yeah? But here we've got Dr. Wu. Dispelling, revealing, DR, short for doctor. Liberating, eliminating, who is the jewel. So I always go, I do this, it's like I'll call a doctor. You've often seen the Buddhas as doctors, aren't they? So this praise, it doesn't take much. I just get the first word right, and go, okay, I'll get the rest. But I just need something to put me off. So the kindness of the guru manifests in three profound ways. So in sutras, they offer the oral transmission. So you've had that here before, haven't you? Like when the teacher who did that personal thought transformation, for instance, the teacher might recite that as an oral transmission, hands over to give it to us. Then of course he gives us teachings, and there's also commentaries on the teachings. And so this is a thing you always want, is a commentary. Now, especially when you start moving up into the tantras and things like that, it's like, it's really difficult. You do need someone to explain to you what it means and how to do it. And in tantra, there are real teachings, they give you the vows, and then they impart the tantric instructions. And if we have these attitudes, and we recollect the kindness of the teacher, then many benefits arise. And so these are just some of them, and they're from the Lama and Chenma. This is from, then if we have this good relationship with the teacher, our thoughts and activities will be virtuous. It means we won't be causing ourselves problems or anybody else a problem. You will please your virtuous friends. You will not bring suffering to yourself or others. You will complete all your actions and good qualities. You will be able to work for the welfare of human beings, and you will be able to help those who think it's wrong paths. So there's, I think, six or so different qualities here.
Surprise!
I think it's how to rely on thought. So how to rely on thought or how to rely on action. But I'll listen to those bits. Well, takeaways if you know this nine things like that. So Deb, without looking at the notes, could you go through the nine?
I love that.
The nine. Oh.
What did you start with?
The wise son. The boy.
Oh,
you started with the wise son, then there was
Roger,
then there was
the
earth. Yes. Then there was a
mountain.
Good. What was after the mountain?
The servant.
Then there was the then there was the
rogue.
And then there was the
dog.
Oh, yeah.
Very
good. There you go. There you go.
Don't ask me tomorrow.
Yeah.
No,
45
minutes.
You got the first one. Ah, that's right. Well, yeah, that's the first thing. You've got to just get the first one, and then get all the pictures just drawn up. So when you say don't ask me tomorrow, if you want to tell me tomorrow, you have to do it when you get back home again. So when you get home, you sit there and you go, okay, what did I begin with? What was there first? It was a dutiful child. He held a barge in his hand and was standing on the earth. On the earth was a mountain. Going up the mountain was a servant. He met a sweeper. The sweeper was the rope. The rope dog grabbed the rope and left on the rope. Done. Then you could go back and say a little, you know, just a sentence about each one. What does it mean? What's it mean? And it gets in there. So next week. Develop a proper answer and teach them practice and form. Wow. It's funny, I look at this class and oh gosh, there's not much there. What am I going to talk about? The next thing is right out of time.
We asked too many questions,
that's why. No, there's so many good stories. You know, I just recollect all the stuff and you ask them questions. You know, enjoy them. Anyway, let's dedicate our America. Due to the merits of his virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the same honor and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme will, by the Jiva, not the born and rising way, may that born have no decline by the pressure of any more, and as long as space remains, as long as it lives in me, may I too remain to the silent sorrows of the world. I wish me a wonderful world, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparable kind intensity that so I beseech, may all the holy wishes see that my holiness is fulfilled. And finally, for the precious fulfilled. In holding and spreading the moon's freshness and complete teachings, the explanations and practice, you all the arm of patience that is never discouraged, incomparable and able to you are not discouraged.